Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition for May 10th and 11th. On our front page today, well, it's finally here with the headline, It's History, Locals Mourn Breezy as Demolition Begins by Kayla White. Bright and early Friday morning, people were gathered along Vermilion Street next to Kresge Park to watch history in the making as the demolition of Breezy Tower began. For friends Charlotte Robbins, Tina Mills, and Peggy Bloomfield, the experience is tough. The three grew up in the area, attending Oakwood High School together, and they often spent time downtown near the tower. Every Saturday we came down here, we had fun, got lunch at Kresge's, and the tower was always there, Mills said, adding that she loved their chili burgers. Bloomfield misses their chocolate-covered bananas, she said. I'm obsessed with the demolitions, said Robbins, shuffling through pictures she's taken of the tower and annex demolitions. It's just history, you know. That's where my family would buy their clothes at that time, the Woolworth. That building is stronger than it was when they built it. It wasn't going anywhere, not until this, Robbins added, saying she wished someone would have bought the building and renovated it. That's the first thing you see when you're coming into town, Mills said. It's our only skyscraper, really. Robbins' family moved to East Chicago Heights when she was a teen, but they would still come home to Danville every weekend. My grandparents lived over on 2nd Avenue, south of here, and when you see the tower, you knew you were home, she said. She also talked about her brother and his friends climbing the fire escapes at night and walking across the rooftops downtown when he was a teenager. He was tall enough to jump up and pull the fire escape ladder down, and they'd all climb it and go right up there, she said, pointing to the top of the tower. Others recall working in the building itself, like attorney Michael O'Brien, who worked in an office in the building from 78 to 79. I worked for the state's attorney's office years ago, and they rented space in there for a deferred prosecution office. Years later, I went in with a private attorney and a law firm in that building. I think we were on the fourth floor, O'Brien said. I'm sad, you know. I would have liked to have seen them give it a try, but I guess that's reality, he added. Danville native Corey Keeley stood nearby on Friday, controlling a drone that hovered above the Vermilion County Courthouse. He and his brother Jeff both enjoy using their drones to document things around the area, he said. I'm doing it just for fun of it, because I'm from Danville, Keeling said. I enjoy watching this kind of stuff. Though the demolition was slated to begin Thursday, a hydraulics issue with some of the machinery meant work had to be delayed to Friday, according to a press release from the city of Danville. For those who prefer an in-person experience like Robbins and her friend, the city encourages people to come watch, though the areas should be approached with extreme caution. Those unable to make it downtown can still watch the demolition online thanks to a time-lapse camera installed downtown. Though it doesn't provide a live feed of the demolition, a photo is taken every 15 minutes and the feed is auto-updated to show progress. To view the live time-lapse footage, visit senseresystems.com/public for more information. Continuing with front page news, new D118 board members, president and VP ready for change by Kayla White. As the 24-25 school district comes to an end later this month, Danville District's 118 Board of Education is preparing for the future. At Wednesday's board meeting, three new members were sworn in and a new president and vice president were elected. New members sworn in. New members Chris Easton, Tony Town, and Dr. Tom Halloran, husband of Darlene Halloran, were sworn in by Circuit Judge Honorable Charles C. Hall. Beyond typical oath language to respect the Constitution of the United States and the state of Illinois, members also swore to respect taxpayers' interests by serving as a faithful protector of the school's district's assets, to encourage and respect the free expression of opinion by my fellow board members, and to respect the decisions of the majority while maintaining the right to seek changes and such decisions through ethical and constructive channels, among other things. Officers chosen. When it was time for members to choose a new president and vice president, Easton nominated Darlene Halloran for the president position and was seconded by Corley. Easton spoke about the responsibilities of a president, saying they do have power, but not like an executive. Aside from deciding what will be on the agenda of each meeting, they also call special meetings, sign official documents, and represent the board at community events, among other responsibilities. For this kind of position, it's important to have someone the community trusts, said Mrs. Halloran. having served as a board member for 12 years. Easton said, adding that before she was a board member, Halloran worked as an educator in the district. She's retired and has a lot of time to serve the district. Being a board president or vice president requires a lot of time and rational thought, said Mrs. Halloran has both, Easton says. No other members were nominated, so Halloran was voted in unanimously, replacing former President Randall Doc Ashton. I have the experience of previous superintendents in the past administration, so I can lead some insight as to what's been done and how it's been done and why it's been done that new members cannot, though I will obviously look to them to help me, Halloran said. I think we have a board that really will support each other and help each other, so I look forward to that. Kimberly Corley was also unanimously elected vice president, replacing outgoing member Shannon Schroeder. She was nominated by town. During closing remarks, Corley said she was relieved to move forward. The one feeling that I have running through me now is relief. I cannot wait to work with this board, Corley said. I know we're going to work together as one unit. We're going to be transparent. We're going to communicate, which is what I've wanted all along. I'm just so incredibly excited at what we can accomplish for this district. I can't wait to get to work, she added. I have a lot of ideas. I have a lot of thoughts. I have a lot of goals, and I seriously can't wait to get started on those, so I'm just incredibly excited. Board President Lakeisha Robinson was unanimously elected to serve another term. Ashton and Schroeder speak. Outgoing members Ashton and Schroeder took their final opportunity to speak to the crowd of parents, staff, and community members. There's a lot of things that have to happen, and you'll all do it. And it's like a choreographed dance that you keep doing day after day, and for the most part it works out, Ashton said, referring to district staff. There are hookups because it's a big district and things, but we recover, and we try, and we learn from whatever happened for the future, and that's what I hope the board does in the future, learn from the path. Ashton says, I wish everybody the best of luck. Schroeder also recognized the hard work of the staff, as well as wished the new board good luck. We have incredible people here in this district, and our community deserves to be very, very proud, she said. It's been an honor of a lifetime to represent our community here for 8 years. Thank you to Dr. Ashton for your leadership, and to my colleagues, and to the incoming board, get ready. You're going to be great. I'm very excited for you, and I'm excited for what's coming through District 118, Schroeder said. The new board voted to keep board meetings to Wednesday evenings. The schedule for new meetings has not been posted to the district website. Update on North Ridge. After delivering her closing remarks, Corley asked Interim Superintendent John Hart for an update on recent uptick in violence at North Ridge Middle School. It's the end of the school year, so we knew that we couldn't take on anything very big, but we obviously know that things need to change, Hart said. We talked about rules being consistent, so we divided our observations into things that the administration could tackle and things that the staff could tackle. He went on to explain that North Ridge staff and administrators were given a task to provide some ideas they could implement now, as well as ideas for next school year on how to improve the situation in key areas, including instruction, environment, and hallways. Hart said the two groups met up recently to look at their list of ideas. We put them together and have committed to those items that will be implemented this school year, and then what we can do next year to improve the climate and culture of North Ridge. I'm very optimistic, Hart said. Payne calls for transparency, improvement. Board member Alice Payne called on the new board to improve upon the work of the old one. I made these comments not only as a board member of just 2 years, but as a 35-year district employee who served both as a teacher and a principal and who's attended well over 100 board meetings. I've watched the District 118 school board at work for over 50 years, Payne said. We have an obligation to do better in fulfilling our responsibilities than what we have done in the last year. She specifically called for more transparency and better communication between board members. It's my hope that the new board will strongly support transparency and open discussion of the issues that we face, she said, adding that in the past she's been unable to get answers from other members of the board or been told the matter had already received the support it needed. All members need access to all information in a timely manner to appropriately consider, deliberate, and decide on the matter, she said. Of course, we may not all agree, but open, transparent discussion and decision-making is not just our responsibility, but our duty. Payne also called for a raise for Hart, as well as expressing concerns regarding information presented to the board at the last hearing regarding the annual audit. According to Payne, D-118 schools have been given an early warning rating from the state's financial report card, a designation which is determined by a formula including 5 school financial factors. Danville District 118 is in the early warning status, which is the next to the lowest rating, with only 77 days of cash on hand, she said. adding that the district hasn't had such a low rating since 2006. In 2015, before Dr. Alicia Geddes started, our financial rating was at the highest level recognition with 149 days of cash on hand. Payne also pointed out that despite enrollment falling to 5,000 students in the district, down from 6,000, the district has hired an additional 15 administrators since 2015. On the academic side of things, Payne said that she was concerned to learn that only 15% of D-118 students are meeting state standards in language arts, compared to a state average of 41%, while only 7% were meeting standards in mathematics, compared to 28% at state average. We have approved millions of dollars to fund various programs and materials, professional development, and curriculum that have been proposed at our meeting. It does appear that some of the investments have not paid off. With more local news on our front page, no charges for Bremer Theater security guard. No laws were broken, according to state's attorney, again by Kayla White. A security guard who watched live security camera footage of children undressing during a theater performance at Dax Bremer Theater will not be charged with a crime, according to Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline Lacey. During performances of Alice in Wonderland Jr., which was performed by Children with Spotlight Performing Arts, SPA Group, the security guard, who worked for a third party that provides security to DAC, watched the live camera footage of the children undressing for unnecessary extended periods of time for non-security purposes while the participants changed into various costumes for the performance, according to Dr. Randy Fletcher, interim president of DAC. The incident. Bailey Thompson, director of SPA, said she was informed of the incident in a call she received from Fletcher several days later. I got a phone call from Dr. Fletcher on Tuesday, April 29th, informing me of the situation, and he requested I come meet with DAC immediately, she said. After that meeting, Fletcher put out an email to parents of children involved in the production explaining what had happened. On the evenings of April 24th and 25th, an employee of a third-party company working at DAC to provide security services was found to be viewing live camera footage of Bremer Conference Room 109, which was used as a dressing room during the performance, Fletcher said in the email. Fletcher went on to point out that children were never fully naked thanks to a dress code policy put in place by SPA, which requires all students to wear either t-shirts and shorts or leotard-like undergarments when changing during performances. The security guard's actions were found out and immediately reported to the chief administrator on campus during one of the performances. They, in turn, immediately contacted DAC Chief of Security Nathan Howey, said Fletcher. Once on the scene, Chief Howey received DAC's security camera system for any unauthorized use. After confirming the security guard's behavior, Howey notified the Danville Police Department, who initiated an investigation into the incident. The camera footage was remanded to the DPD as evidence for their ongoing investigation, Fletcher said. DAC's internal investigation of the incident found that the security guard did not copy, save, or transmit any video footage from the DAC security camera system and that their actions were limited to the two evenings. As for the security guard, State's Attorney Lacey provided a formal statement saying the matter has been fully investigated by the Danville Police Department in conjunction with the Vermilion County State's Attorney's Office. Following a thorough review of the facts and applicable law, there is no criminal conduct to be charged in this matter, Lacey said. We appreciate the public's patience during the course of this investigation. Danville Police Chief Christopher Yates said the DPD can only act according to state mandate. We only go by what's based off the law, the state statute, which is referred by the state's attorney's office, to determine whether or not it's a violation of the statute, Yates said, adding that though he had a meeting with Lacey on Monday regarding the incident, he does not have anything new to provide at this point. Though the security guard will not face state charges, DAC issued a lifetime campus ban for them, which subjects them to arrest for trespassing if found on any DAC campuses, facilities, or events. Moving forward. As for the children who were involved in the play, Thompson said they're doing as well as can be expected. It has certainly been a difficult situation. Many of them are still too young to fully understand what occurred, which in some ways has spared them from the weight of it, Thompson said. Throughout this process, we've worked hard to maintain a positive and safe environment, and I've been genuinely moved by the resilience and mutual support the kids, their families, and the community have shown one another, she said. Despite the fact that no charges will be filed by the state, Thompson said that the organization and some parents are considering civil suits. While this chapter may be over legally, for us it is not over morally or ethically. We will continue to fight for the kids involved and for the justice they deserve, Thompson said in a social media post. These children matter deeply, and their experiences should not be dismissed or overlooked. We as an organization and also the parents are continuing to push for further action, Thompson told the Commercial News. Due to this incident, SPA will not utilize Bremer Theater for showing performances in the future, Thompson said. That decision could always change down the line, but our priority is making sure our kids and families feel completely safe and supported, she said. We're currently focusing on performing at Fisher Theater and other community venues where we've had strong positive partnerships, she added. The next show for the group is July 4th at the historic Fisher Theater, she said. As we reach our halfway point of reading together, let's turn our attention to today's death notices. We have one, Betty Gore. Betty Gore, 102 years old, of Normal, Illinois, formerly of Danville, passed away on May 6th. A celebration of her life will be held at 2 p.m. on Tuesday, May 13th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville at 3940 North Vermilion Street. Matt Felisky will officiate. Burial will be in Mann's Chapel Cemetery, and visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. on Tuesday, May 13th at the funeral home. Memorials may be made in Betty's honor to ARC, A-R-C, at Normal at 509 North Adelaide Street, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Turning our attention to some community briefs of things coming up in our communities, Caitlin Library plans a book sale. The Caitlin Public Library will have a used book sale from now until June 7th. Hardbacks and paperbacks, nonfiction, fiction, DVDs, and children's books are all available for purchase. The cost of the books is any donation supporting the library's programs. The library is open Monday from 9 to 5, Tuesday from 9 to 7, Wednesday and Thursday from 9 to 5, Friday from 9 to 7, and Saturday from 9 to noon. And the library is located at 101 Maple Leaf Drive in Catlin. CRIS Healthy Aging celebrates Older Americans Month. CRIS, or CRIS Healthy Aging, will celebrate Older Americans Month with a luncheon and entertainment at the Danville Senior Center on Thursday, May 22nd. Lunch will feature spaghetti with meatballs, salad, garlic bread with all-American cake, and drinks. Lunch will be served from 11:30 to 12:30. The Accolade Healthcare Assisted is in providing entertainment for the event, and Danville's very own Troy Stone is scheduled to serenade. Seating is limited. To make your reservation, call CRIS Healthy Aging at 217-443-2999. In our final community brief, DHS senior yard signs to be placed. Danville High School will be placing senior yard signs down Vermilion Street on Friday, May 16th. They will be picked up and returned to the school the morning of Wednesday, May 21st. Families may take their students' yard sign from Vermilion Street at their convenience. Please park on a side street and walk to pick up the sign. Do not stop on Vermilion Street. All yard signs returned to DHS Tuesday, May 21st will be given to seniors to take home at the end of the senior farewell and fiesta that same day. Any remaining signs will be placed in the grassing area outside the Circle Drive for families to pick up at their convenience starting on Thursday, May 22nd. Congratulations to all our area Danville High School seniors, including our very own Olivia Maltless, my niece. Thanks. I usually choose one of the editorial items to share with you. This morning, I know that we were all aware of the passing of Pope Francis, and have all and many of us watched in interest as the Catholic community elects their next pope. And many of you probably already know the outcome of that action as you listen to me today. But this article was written by Megan Giles Cooney. She is a columnist for the Traverse City, Michigan Record Eagle. And this was written prior to who we knew the outcome of that conclave. But I think it's interesting, and I think even if you're not a Catholic, you'll enjoy her words. So today, her headline of her column is Pope Francis and Human Partnership. I'm not a Catholic. Yet I still wait to see what qualities of humanity came forth from the ancient rituals of selecting a new pope by the conclave of cardinals in Rome on May 7th. The late Pope Francis was a talented man, a good person, and a servant leader during uncertain times. Universally respected and liked, he led with compassion and wisdom. In reading about his passing, I came across a foreword he had recently written for Catholics approaching marriage. His advice seemed spot on. advice that also applies to other challenges that take grit and discipline to stick with. Published in January, this last year of his life, Pope Francis wrote, "I'm always touched to see young people who love each other and have the courage to transform their love into something great. I want to love you until death do us part." The politics of marriage aside, this column is not about who should be married or who should be legally married. It's about the spirit of partnership, looking for and finding a person you really count on and are prepared to invest in. Sticking with people you're committed to is easy on good days and tougher on others. But the luxury of allegiance is loving someone at least as much as you love yourself, is counting on a rock-solid principle, an investment in something tangible, happiness and flexibility, and the benefits of repeatedly finding common ground. In his words to couples on the crest of a lifelong commitment, the late Pope said, "Love wants to be permanent. Until further notice isn't love." So many experiences and situations now seem transactional, fractured, and impersonal. Finding room to practice permanence might help. Finding people you're permanently committed to takes a leap that someone else will return your faith. As we anticipate the white puffs of smoke announcing the next pope, we can hope for a new leader who, in the spirit of the last, represents love and a commitment to persistent understanding of others, a force for good. It's a wishful thought we may all agree on. Thank you, Megan Giles Cooney. We just came off of a weekend that had extraordinarily beautiful weather, and I hope all of you had the opportunity to spend some time outside. I thought it would be good then to turn our attention to what's going on in our state and our state parks. It seems appropriate as we enter into summertime. Illinois state parks drawing big numbers. Some state parks have had recent major renovations by Ben Selansky from Capital News Illinois. Illinois State Parks saw more visitors in 2024 than any point in the past 15 years, according to new data from the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Illinois' 290 state parks and 56 historic sites recorded more than 41 million visitors last year, which was the most in 15 years, following several significant capital projects to upgrade and improve many of the parks. Interest in state parks has been growing since the pandemic, IDNR Director Natalie Phelps Finney said in an interview. During COVID, people were stir-crazy, shut in, and once they again realized how important nature is to all of us, Phelps Finney said, an aggressive advertising campaign by the state has also helped. The Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity launched the state's Middle of Everything marketing campaign in 2022, which promotes tourism at the state's top recreation and cultural attractions in TV commercials, billboards, and online advertising. Starved Rock State Park in LaSalle County topped the list in 2024, with 2.4 million visitors coming to explore the canyons and waterfalls nestled in gorges along the Illinois River in north-central Illinois. The second most visited park last year was Illinois Beach State Park near Zion, with 2 million visitors. IDNR completed a major $73 million project last year to preserve the park from erosion. It's always been a high number of visitors, but certainly the uptick we've seen since the beach was restored and since the resort is being invested in once again and remodeled, Phelps Finney said. Beach State Park holds Illinois' only undeveloped stretch of Lake Michigan shoreline, but it's subject to the ferocious waves of the lake. The conditions have sometimes eroded up to 100 feet of shoreline a year in parts of the park. To preserve the park's shoreline, IDNR's project included building 22 breakwater structures in the lake, to decrease the power of the waves hitting the shore. Several of the structures are entirely submerged, while others that poke out of the surface of the lake are designed to provide nesting for migratory birds. The project also included extending the public beach further into Lake Michigan. Erosion had diminished the beach to come within feet of the parking lot and hotel at the park. The state also announced earlier this year it will put $60 million towards deferred maintenance projects. More than half of that will go to Starved Rock for trail improvements, facility renovations, and building a new wastewater system. The department is also working on adding electric vehicle chargers at state parks and renovating the old state capitol in Springfield. This year, IDNR plans to restore and upgrade the Crenshaw House in Gallatin County to include a visitor center at a location on the reverse underground railroad where slaves were held. According to IDNR, John Crenshaw used slaves at his southern Illinois home where he manufactured salt. Crenshaw is also believed to have kidnapped, freed, or escaped slaves to sell them back to slavery in the South. We're excited that the investment is being made and these parks are getting the attention they deserve, Phelps Finney said. Lincoln's New Salem historic site in Petersburg, where the 16th president lived in his 20s, was the state's most visited historic site last year with 360,000 visitors. The site is in line for funding for repair aging buildings. IDNR announced in March it will invest $8 million to repair up to 23 replica log buildings at the site that depict how the village looked when Lincoln lived there in the 1830s. You have things fall into disrepair and then it dominoes, Phelps Finney said. It builds. So what once maybe $100 million or so is now a little over $1 billion worth of deferred maintenance across the IDNR properties. Capital News Illinois is a nonprofit, nonpartisan news service that distributes state government coverage to hundreds of news outlets statewide. Continuing with our state news and some good reminders for us as we start to get out more in the summer, IDOT and ISP urge public to start seeing motorcycles. The Illinois Department of Transportation, Illinois State Police, and motorcycle safety advocates are reminding all users of the road to start seeing motorcycles as part of Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month. We want every driver and every motorcyclist to share and safely enjoy Illinois roads, said Stephanie Seckberhane, IDOT's Bureau Chief of Safety Programs and Engineering. Don't take risks. Always obey the traffic lights, signs, speed limits, and lane markings, and never drive or ride impaired. The Start Seeing Motorcycles campaign coincides with the arrival of warmer weather and more motorcyclists on the roads. During the riding season, Start Seeing Motorcycle banners and yard signs will be on display throughout the state, reminding the public to always stay alert for motorcycles. With more than 150 deaths in Illinois each year, motorcyclists are significantly overrepresented in traffic crashes and fatalities. Although motorcycles represent 3% of total vehicle registrations in Illinois, according to IDOT, they account for nearly 14% of traffic fatalities in 2023, the most recent year statistics that are available. There were 1,245 traffic fatalities in Illinois in 2023. 168 were motorcyclists, an increase of 23 from 2022. While there are fewer motorcycles on roads compared to passenger cars, the motorcycle fatality rate for crashes is 5 times higher than the fatality rate for passenger cars. So there we have it. Be vigilant and see motorcycles. Wow, this has been a fast 30 minutes. Let's take a quick look at some of the headlines in sports. Out of nowhere, Cunningham leans BHRE to VVC title. Entering the 2025 Vermilion Valley Conference boys track season, not many, if anyone, knew about Bismarck Kenny Rossville Alvin's junior Mason Cunningham. In his first 2 years with the Blue Devils, Cunningham's best race was being part of the second-place 800-meter relay team for the Blue Devils at last year's conference meet. But something has changed in the past 12 months. Cunningham won both the 100 and 200 races on Thursday night, while also being part of the winning 400 and 800 relays, and the Blue Devils reclaimed the conference title with a 29-point victory over the two-time defending league champions, the Salt Fork Storm. In girls' prep track news, Salt Fork repeats as VC champions. It was a repeat performance for the Salt Fork girls' track team on Thursday night at the Vermilion Valley Conference meet at Memorial Field in Westville. The Storm claimed its second straight and eighth conference title by 17 points over the Bismarck-Henning-Rossville-Alvin Blue Devils, thanks to three relay victories to go along with just three individual titles. In prep baseball last week, it was Salt Fork 1, BHRA 0, Westville 3, Oakwood 1, Centennial 17, Danville 2, Watsika 23, Schlarman 9, and GRFC 10, Iroquois West 4. In prep softball, Oakwood, Schlarman 7, Westville 6, Salt Fork 12, BHRA 9, Hoopston Area 14, Chrisman 4, Milford 5, AP 4, and Iroquois West 4, GORF 2, Attica 10, and Fountain Central 7. Lots going on as we wrap up our high school sports for the season. Well, that, again, was a fast 30 minutes. Let's take a look at what our forecast holds on to us for this week, so what we have to look forward to. Gosh, after that weekend, how could it be more beautiful? It looks like Monday we're going to have some heavy showers in the afternoon, a high of 74. Tuesday will bring us some variable clouds with a shower with a high of 75. Wednesday, looks like there's a thunderstorm around in the morning, but a high of 82. Thursday, very warm with sunny intervals at 88 degrees. And on Friday, mostly cloudy and very warm at 85. Well, it's going to be hot this week. I hope you enjoy it. Water your plants. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Danville Commercial News, the weekend edition. I look forward to reading again with you soon.